And with that, I'll withdraw the amendment.
I'm just wondering why after the reception you got up here, you'd want to come back.
Amendment is withdrawn. Senator Halford?
Just to speak to the objection before the motion is withdrawn, I voted no on the contract. I didn't think that was the right way to go, but I had known Mr. Josephson before he came up here on the contract. It is a nonprofit organization. He is not receiving any benefit other than the honor of doing a good job out of this. And I hope he's willing to help more. I withdraw my objection.
Senator Fakes?
Just to remind Senator from Nenana, he didn't call us. We called him.
Madam Secretary.
Amendment number 32 by Senator Calkins, page 67, has been distributed.
Senator Coghill.
I move the adoption of the amendment number 32. Mr. President, what we're doing here is we're saying that the current issues at the seminar, and what all I'm asking is that we insert a new D and say that the course shall also include a discussion of the Constitution of Alaska, which will include material on the constitutional limitations and prerogatives of the legislative, executive, and judicial branch of government.
Ask the unanimous consent, Mr. President.
There's objection. Senator Halford?
I was going to offer an amendment to the amendment to say that no member who served on the Constitutional Convention should participate in any way benefit for providing this information, but I won't offer the amendment.
Senator Porcheau?
I wouldn't have any problem with that.
You know, it seems like the my friend from Nenana, just as he probably has concerns when we in the legislature tell local school boards and school districts what kind of curriculum that they can teach or should teach. This is a scope question here, I think. It is probably an integral part of any ethics course here to include things like constitutional provisions governing disciplining of members of a house, the immunities clause. There are key constitutional issues that pertain to ethics. There are a whole lot of other things that are great civics course, but deal very tangentially with the question of ethics. I don't think we ought to make this more than it is. It's going to be a tough squeeze to fit in everything into any kind of a normal time frame as it is. I just think that broadens the scope of this too much, and it, even though it might be worthwhile, it's probably worthwhile for a lot of people in another forum.
Question being, shall amendment number 32 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. If all members voted, Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? I'll change my vote. Secretary will record the vote. That went wrong. That vote will be voided. We'll try that again. Question being, shall amendment number 32 be adopted? Members may proceed. Members may proceed to vote. If all members voted, Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote, so amendment number 32 is adopted by a count of 15 yeas and 5 nays.
Amendment number 33 by Senator Coghill, page 75, and this has been distributed.
Senator Coghill.
Lost on this once before, but I'll try it again. I move the adoption of amendment number 33, and it on line 6 changes constituents to people. It says political action means conducting in which public officials, including legislators or legislative employees, use their official position or political contact to exercise influence on the state and local government employees or entities. It includes, but is not limited to, the intervening on behalf of people with the government, with a government agency. Again, I read it as being restrictive, and I would recommend that we pass amendment.
Question being, shall amendment number 32 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote. And so amendment number 33 failed by a vote of 6 yeas and 14 nays. I will rule amendment number 35 as duplicative to amendment 34 as duplicative to amendment number 12. Madam Secretary.
Amendment number 35 by Senator Coghill, page 78, lines 5 through 10, and this has been distributed.
Senator Coghill.
I move adoption of amendment number 35.
There's objection, Senator Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, it has to do with the dual system that was put in the bill as far as single representative districts and single Senate districts making different structures, and I would want to include in it a legislator may voucher up to $6,000 under this section.
Senator Porcheau.
Thank you, Mr. President.
We spent a lot of time in the Joint Committee on this issue, probably, frankly, too much time. But I think what we arrived at was a system that struck some balance between strict equality for a vouchered account, regardless of the size of a district, versus some recognition that some districts are literally four times the population size as other districts. A double Senate district has theoretically four times the number of people as a single House district. What we tried to do was build a base of 6,000 vouchered expenses for everyone and then give a small increment directly proportional to the size of the district up to $9,000. It's not twice as much for twice as many people, but it's some recognition that the reality is most of these vouchered expenses directly relate to mail. Mail is very directly related to the number of people that we all serve, and this was agreeable to the House members in the Joint Committee. I'm only speaking for those three members, but we believed was a fair balancing of those two competing forces.
Question being, shall amendment number 35 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. If any senator wishes to change their vote, Secretary will record the vote. So amendment number 35 fails by a vote of 3 yeas and 17 nays.
Amendment number 36 by Senator Coghill, page 22, and it has been distributed.
Senator Coghill.
Mr. President, this one got out of sequence. It's on page 22, 11 through 14. And what I'm doing here is the close economic association. I don't know how you could put into the basic law create the appearance that the person may have access to confidential information or otherwise receive favorable treatment regarding public action. Close economic, but you keep in there, close economic association includes but is not limited to. We're taking out that number two, which goes back to close economic association, refers to a financial relationship between two or more persons that creates economic interest in a legislator or a legislative employee that either, one, conflict with public duties and the obligations to access objective independent judgment, or two, to create the appearance. I don't know how you're going to do that, but a person may have access to confidential information or otherwise receive favorable treatment regarding public action.
Senator Porcheau.
Maybe best to give an example of that. The example that I can think of is the legislator whose wife works for the Department of Natural Resources and Oil and Gas Leasing. They are planning, let's not say oil and gas, any kind of land leasing. They are developing a program for land leasing for any particular reason. I would say in that case there may be an appearance if the person is a real estate broker, for example, in his private life or a legislator, that there might be some association there that people might view as him having insider information by virtue of his association with someone else, whether it's his wife or someone else. It's not prohibited activity, it's disclosable activity, much the same as what we have now for close economic association.
Question being, shall amendment number 36 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the rolls. Any senator wish to change their vote, Secretary will record the vote. And so amendment number 36 fails with a vote of 2 yeas and 18 nays. Amendment number 37, Madam Secretary.
Amendment number 37 by Senator Zemanski, page 33, and it has been distributed.
Senator Zemanski.
Thank you. I move to ask unanimous consent. Amendment number 37.
There is objection.
Thank you, Mr. President. The amendment before you, I think, goes to the foundation of this ethics bill in that all legislatures begin with an organization. And the basic principle by which we organize is the principle by which we follow through and follow our practices throughout the legislative session or sessions. I think that we're all keenly aware that on several occasions there have been people who have objected to feeling a sense of being bound to vote, or we've heard suggestions that individuals can or should be locked into a particular position. And that organization begins many times by power broking, by individuals who have interest in the legislative makeup, interest in chairmanships, but not necessarily by the individual legislators, but by outside forces, by individuals who would like to stop legislation from going through the process, who would like to use that power, if they're able to obtain it, to their financial benefit, by stopping legislation. And many times people have questioned whether or not this practice goes on. I'm not going to be the judge and jury on that. I think that the vote will be the judge and jury on that. My conclusion is that if we're going to be straight from the beginning, let's set the foundation. And the foundation of the legislature, again, goes back to the organization. And no one should have the ability to lock themselves into a position which is against the public's best interest. And many times that's the problem. We find ourselves, because of our own personal desire, wanting to make concessions early on. Many times, not necessarily around a common philosophical background or position, but because of particular interests that other people have. And because of that, I offer this amendment because I believe that it will be what I think will be the foundation to a good, substantial ethics code for the legislature.
Senator Fakes.
We had, the Joint Committee was offered this amendment by the Senator, and we accepted it. And what we did is we put it into the commentary. It's one of the features under the commentary that talks about conduct, talks about committee chairs, talks about organization, and this fit right in there. And unfortunately, that's not before us. And I happen to support this, but I think the place for it was in that commentary where we talked about other behaviors of the operation of the legislature.
Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would wonder if this is intended to work. I would like to have a retroactive effective date, I thought. But I wonder if it also worked with regard to going out of an organization. I know the rules chairman, in her deposition to the Daily News, said how she would defend my right to dissent. And now I have another member of the majority willing to defend my right to dissent and vote my conscience on things like bills and legislation. So I would certainly support the amendment, but I would hope that it would be made retroactive, at least to the end of the last session.
Senator Curtula.
I'm going to give the good senator the opportunity at the end of the session when I introduce the retroactivity.
Senator Binkley.
Mr. President, I'm pleased to see that the Joint Committee on Ethics did adopt this into their commentary. However, I think it's pretty clear now that we're not going to adopt the commentary. I think the principle is still the same. If people believe in this, it ought to be placed in law, and they ought to vote for it and not try and use it as an excuse the fact that it's in the commentary that's not going to be adopted.
Senator Frank.
Mr. President, I think that this is in keeping with the theory that the Finance Committee used, was to get the sanctions and the meat and potatoes into the bill and take the commentary out. So I think it is a good amendment, and I certainly urge support.
Question being, shall Amendment 37 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Any member wish to change their vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Secretary will record the vote. And so amendment number 37 passes by a vote of 20 yeas and no nays.
Amendment number 38 by Senator Fakes, page 5, line 28, and it has been distributed.
Senator Fakes.
Yes, sir. This is the one that I had withdrawn earlier. I will move amendment 38, sir.
There's objection.
Okay, this is the section under misuse of power or misuse of office section where the Finance Committee deleted that third item on page 28. And so what I'm doing is inserting the word misusing at the end of line, page 5, line 28, and then inserting on page 6, line 5, the benefit for social or business associates, political contributors, or corporations. I left out the other end of that phrase on association. So I would hope that the amendment could pass it.
Senator Yearling.
Thank you, Mr. President. Again, I'm not going to support this. I think it was pretty evident in the Finance Committee that there's still a question about what is considered social, and it is sort of vague.
Senator Fakes.
It simply says you cannot misuse your office for your political contributors or misuse of the let me just find it. I'm sorry. This is the section that page 5. Yeah, I'm reading page 5 for you. Okay, misuse of office for private gain. It's a general principle, and it just simply says you can't misuse your office for the personal financial gain of others, the benefits, advantages, or whatever. And this was deleted from that section, and all I want to do is put it back in that you cannot misuse your office for private gain for the benefit of a business associate or a political contributor or corporation.
Senator Binkley.
Again, the problem, I don't think anybody has any problem with the concept there, but what, I might ask this question, what is the definition of a social associate?
Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, Senator Binkley is correct. I think the courts would have a great deal of trouble with this because the language is so vague that it has to be unconstitutional because it's unclear exactly what we're trying to do. And I might point out that on page 5, that where it says standards of conduct, again, we ought to be clear about what we're doing. And if we just said a legislator or a legislative employee may not use or attempt to use a government position to retain and then go from there. And I see that throughout this, it really would be well for us to make this language as clear and unequivocal as possible.
Question being, shall amendment number 38 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will take the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote, and so amendment number 38 fails by a vote of 10 yeas, 10 nays.
Amendment number 39 by Senator Halford, page 9, lines 3 through 7, and it has been distributed.
Senator Halford.
I move amendment number 39.
There is objection. Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. President. Amendment number 39 deletes the state-funded newsletters. If we were taking out the condition that they have essentially real information, then they certainly shouldn't be funded by the state. Amendment number 39 is exactly the same as amendment number 40 by Senator Elias, and we just apparently had the same idea and sent them up there independently.
Senator Porchell.
Mr. President, I may have missed something. I'm still confused. If we delete D, we have no policies for the production newsletters or similar publications. We do in another section have proviso for the ability to have two newsletters paid for at public funds. This amendment doesn't go to that. So this just eliminates any and all restrictions on the form and content of those two newsletters. This is even a further step backwards.
Senator Fakes?
Says to delete the state-funded newsletters, this is not the right section to do that. And so hopefully the maker of the motion would withdraw this and then resubmit a new amendment.
Okay, the purpose is to delete state-funded newsletters, so I would move and ask unanimous consent that amendment number 39 be withdrawn.
Without objection, Senator Duncan.
Are you going to resubmit another amendment? I guess I can talk against his amendment when he resubmits another.
Amendment number 39 is withdrawn. Madam Secretary.
Amendment number 40, page 9, line 3.
That's a duplicative amendment. Amendment number 42. 41. I don't have 41.
Amendment number 41, by Senator Porchell, page 50, after line 60, and insert a new section to read. It has been distributed.
Senator Porcel.
Mr. President, I would move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of Amendment Number 41. This is a revision of the earlier Amendment Number 11.
Is there objection? There is objection. Senator Binkley?
Just for the purposes of a question, now this would be something that the legislature could look at, could change if they did not feel comfortable with it before they approved it. It wouldn't be that they would have to take it or leave it.
Senator Porcel.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, and actually the major emphasis here is not on the approval or not approval. I think it's to get the commission, when they're going in January for 6 months, this is part of their task, actually. It's not so much as this book that's going to be part and parcel of something else. I think it can be used as their manual and in trying to flesh out the law to help people comply with it when it does take effect July. So it's I see that as part and parcel of their duties from January until July, but it would require them coming back to the legislature prior to any publication of that compendium of information.
There is objection. Question being, Senator Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just back to the Senator, Chairman of the State Affairs Committee. Would this, and maybe this isn't necessary, but when we discussed the effective dates in the Finance Committee, we talked about the fact that it would be helpful for the Commission to be up and going by January 1st so that they had some time to go through the legislation so that they could come back not only with the commentary and guideline recommendations, but also potential recommendations in the legislation itself, so that there might be some fine-tuning, some things that they found were confusing, where they could ask the legislature to clarify that, and I'm wondering if that should be included in this section also.
Senator Fakes?
Yeah, there's another section in the bill that you folks did not take out that tells the commission to do just that on a yearly basis, that tells them to come back with suggested law changes, suggested recommendations for the legislature to consider and adopt if we so desire. So that's another whole section.
Senator Duncan.
Just briefly, I objected to the First Amendment that the senator had offered, and I also opposed this insertion in the bill that we had in the Finance Committee. However, I believe the problem has been corrected. My major concern was that we were having someone outside write something that the legislature would not first approve, and I think the senator is taking care of the problem, and I would support the amendment.
Senator Yearling.
I withdraw my objection.
Objection to the adoption of Amendment Number 41 is withdrawn. Is there further objection? Without objection, Amendment Number 41 is adopted.
Mr. President.
Senator Frank.
Can we have a brief at ease?
Senator will stand at ease. Order, Madam Secretary.
Amendment Number 42 by Senator Fakes. Page 72 after line 29 has been distributed.
Senator Fakes.
This is a definition that's in the statutes right now. This is a state law that defines a business entity retained to lobby. My learned colleague next to me, the majority leader, noted that on page 25, line 8, that section refers to business entities retained to lobby, and there might have been some confusion as to where that came from. I told him that was an APOC definition, and we thought, to be perfectly clear, it should be included in the definition sections at the end of this, within the definition section of this chapter. So this is straight out of the statutes. This is current law, and I would ask unanimous consent for the adoption of this.
There is objection. Senator will be at ease. Amendment Number 42 has been withdrawn. Is there further objection? Without objection, Amendment Number 42 is adopted. Madam Secretary.
Amendment Number 43 by Senator Coghill, page 25, lines 13 through 16, and it has been distributed.
Senator Coghill.
Mr. President, I move the adoption of the amendment.
There is objection. Senator
Coghill. Mr. President, we We had a lot of discussion on this earlier. It was my amendment, I believe, number 13 or something like that. And what I've done is I've rewritten the section. As it stands now, a legislator may not serve on a governing or an advisory board of a non-governmental organization that regularly has a substantial interest in the legislative, administrative, and political action of the legislature. And I've rewritten it to say a legislator may serve on a governing or advisory board of a non-governmental organization, providing that the legislator disqualifies to any vote or action on which there is substantial interest in legislative, administrative, or political action of that legislator. And that really takes care of the objections, because what it does is that if you've got an action by a legislator, he disqualifies himself to that particular area.
Senator Sturgill-Lewski.
Just very briefly, I think the wording in the legislation is appropriate. This has, it seems to me, the unfortunate reaching down into a non-governmental organization and affecting their voting standards, possibly more majority vote, quorum, other kinds of things. It's telling them who can really vote. So I think it's very far-reaching, and I object.
Question being, shall... there is a call of the Senate. Senate stand at ease. Madam Secretary.
We are on amendment number 43.
Senator Halford. Senator Coghill?
Mr. President, we had substantial debate on this particular amendment, and the way the bill reads now, no legislator can serve on a governing board or an advisory board of a non-government organization that regularly has substantial interest in the legislative, administrative, and political actions of the legislator. We try to reach it by saying that the legislator can serve on those boards, providing that the legislator disqualifies himself when it's directly involved with substantial interest in the legislative, administrative, or political action of the legislator. And I think that that gives him the right to be able to help devise the policy of that non-governmental board, do the administrative functions of the non-government board, but when it comes to actions down here in the legislature, that if there's an appropriation or something that's direct, we do that now, or you disqualify yourself when it time comes for that vote because you have a vested or a substantial interest in it. And I would recommend that you take a good hard look at this before you just punch the no button.
Senator Eliason.
Mr. President, I think I know we can't get there from here. It seems that if, in fact, you did serve on a board of a nonprofit organization and you discussed legislative issues, and, you know, you could set the stage and you just refuse to vote and you could go down and promote it. You know, this, you're not getting there from this position. I don't think the original concept is all that bad. I think we're wasting a lot of time on this.
Question being, shall amendment number, Senator Halford.
I'd also point out that the remedy provided is contrary to the uniform rules.
Question being, shall amendment number 43 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. If all members voted, Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote, and so amendment 43 failed by a vote of 4 yeas and 16 nays. Madam Secretary.
Amendment number 44 by Senators Halford and Eliason, page 9, lines 3 through 7. It's been distributed.
Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. President. Still after the free newsletters, now we've picked up both sections, the section that restricts the way they're done and the section that authorizes them to be done in the first place. I would move and ask unanimous consent that we adopt amendment number 44.
Yeah. Senator Halford.
Go ahead.
Senator Duncan.
I just wanted to speak against the amendment very briefly, and I've got a thousand things before me. So the problem with this is it's also intertwined with a lot of other things that go on in this legislation. For example, we're changing the way that, I'll give this example, and I think a number of people have done this, we're giving the way that, or changing the way that surplus balances of campaign accounts can be used, for example. We're saying that you can't carry forward a balance, nor can you expend from that campaign account. Under present law, I know a number of folks have filed letters of intent to run for office, have raised money, and used that money to communicate with their constituents, to send out newsletters. I don't think that's improper. Under present law, it's perfectly legal. If people want to contribute to me so I can communicate with them, I think that's proper. However, under the changed law that's in this bill, that will not be allowed. That will be restricted. And I don't believe there's anyone, at least I know I can't, afford to send a couple newsletters a year that costs $6,000 or $7,000 apiece or $5,000 apiece to constituents. And you surely won't be able to afford it out of my personal pocket, and you won't be able to afford it out of your allowance account, your legislative allowance account. So it's intertwined. A lot of this information in this bill, I've come to understand, as the chairman of the Ethics Committee has pointed out several times, is intertwined and interrelated. When you do one thing, you do cause problems in other areas. I speak against the amendment.
Mr. President, I know what he's saying, but it seems to me that if we allow the legislature to print newsletters at public expense, we're setting ourselves up to a situation where it's going to get out of hand, and I thought we were trying to avoid these issues. We know, for an example, what's happening in Washington, D.C. You get the newsletters every day. They're spending millions of dollars under the pretext of informing their constituents when, in fact, they're campaigning. So once you open the door to that practice, I think you're totally destroying what we're trying to do. I think if you want to really do it properly, I think you should go back and revisit your problem. Say you can use X amount of dollars for your leftover campaign to do that each year. What's wrong with that approach? That is a political issue, and we should be resolved with political funding rather than state funding.
Senator Fearnkamp.
Thank you, Mr. President. In every year that I have chaired Resources Committee, I have tried to respond at the end of the year to every person who has written me, whether they're in my district or throughout the state, with concerns that of things that are in the Resources Committee. I do not consider that political. I consider that keeping the public informed. I don't know how other people use newsletters, but that's the way I use newsletters that are paid for by the state. I see nothing wrong with that. If I have one that's the least bit political or talking about anything not in my committee, I pay for that out of campaign funds, and I think that's the difference.
Senator Halford.
Well, I certainly don't disagree with the former speaker with regard to a committee letter on things that are in the committee. But that's not what we've seen. We've seen major political newsletters go out. The compromise that was offered by the committee was, yes, you can have a letter, but put something in it. And maybe the exact description of the things that were in it was too much. But the alternative of saying nothing and no requirement other than what the council comes up with was too little. If the compromise is out there different than this, then we should look for it. But until we know what's going to be of substance in newsletters, in this legislation, we should not be funding them with public funds, in my opinion.
Senator Szymanski.
Thank you. I'm going to support the amendment because I think that when you think about what we're doing here and you think about the fairness and the balance between those who are incumbents and those who are challengers, you've got to recognize that at some point in time, you've got to keep the scale balanced. If a person wants to run for office, they file, they follow the appropriate procedures, they raise the money, and they put out campaign material. But if you're not in the same position to do that, I mean, if you're a challenger and you're taking an incumbent on, it seems to me that the fairness would say that he should be given the same allocation as the person he's taking on. So unless somebody wants to add it in here for the challengers, it seems to me that it's not a balanced relationship.
Senator Yuling.
Thank you, Mr. President. The question of the sponsor. Under these sections, are we taking out the actual dollar amount that would go for the newsletter so there would be no money at all for any kind of newsletters, unlike present practice?
Senator Halford.
What we're taking out is the provision that authorizes newsletters and the provision that requests that the council come up with criteria under which newsletters are sent. The council provision was the provision that was amended by the Finance Committee after the bill came out of the Special Committee on Ethics and essentially took out the requirements that there be certain substantive things in newsletters. There was an amendment offered to put those substantive requirements back in. That amendment failed. at the time of that debate. The other question was, if we're not going to put anything required in them in this statute, then why should we be funding them? And that's the amendment you have before you.
Further discussion? Question being, shall amendment number... Senator Fahrenkamp.
I thought we had a group that was looking at this for a period of 6 months and making recommendations to the legislature. Are they incapable of making recommendations concerning the newsletter?
Senator Lyson.
Things mixed up a little here. We're not talking about the chairman of the resources sending out letters to people who are interested in the business of the resource committee. I don't question your motives at all, but some people might think that might be just a little political. How about the people who are not chairmen? They can't send out a letter. But, you know, that's a different issue. We're talking about a paid letter to the constituents in your district saying about talking about all the good things you're going to do. And, that, boy, you got a wide-open door then.
Further discussion. Question being, shall amendment number 44 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. If all members voted, Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote, and so amendment number 44 fails by a vote of 10 yeas and 10 nays.
Amendment number 45 by Senators Curtula and Zanaski, page 76, line 29, has been distributed.
Senator Curtula.
President, I'm not certain under the rules if I shouldn't move, because if it does incorporate another section, I shouldn't move to rescind my action in failure, or the legislative body's action failure to pass Amendment 12, and ask unanimous consent.
Senator Halford.
Because there's two sections to the amendment, I think I should rescind one. I think it does no damage to take up that context with that which I wish to delete, which is Section 9, which ties into it.
I don't think it requires a rescinding motion, Mr. President, but they are two different amendments.
Senator Curtula, the amendment's in order.
Mr. President, I move the amendment.
There is objection, Senator Curtula.
Mr. President, it's well done. All it does is put back the present system, the present salary system, the present short and long-term paying system.
Senator Frank.
Thank you, Mr. President. This one has been a little bit difficult for me because I do believe that we should have a stronger ethics package, but I don't like the idea of tying the issue of ethics to the pay raise. When the whole idea first became a topic of discussion, there was discussion about limiting legislators' outside income. That notion has been, if not entirely, pretty much flatly rejected in this bill. We have continued to endorse in this bill the idea of a citizen legislature. We have not limited outside income. We have provided for better disclosure of outside income, but we have not prohibited it. I think that to bring these two together is not in keeping with spirit of the Constitution. I think the Constitution is clear that the bill should be of a limited subject. We shouldn't try to bring two issues together to get support. And I just think they can be separated and they should be separated.
Question being, shall amendment number 45 pass? Senator Halford.
President, I would just point out from the compensation report from Legislative Affairs for last year, we show several members over $50,000. The total compensation package, if it goes up under the provision that is in this bill, certainly doesn't go up anywhere near what is being advocated or being pointed out on this floor.
Question being, shall amendment number 45 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the rolls. Any senator wish to change their vote, Secretary will record the vote. So amendment number 45 fails by a vote of 6 yeas and 14 nays. Are there any other amendments?
No, sir.
Senator Halford.
Move and ask unanimous.
Senate will stand at ease. Senate will come back to order. Senator Halford.
Mr. President, there is an amendment on the Secretary's desk.
Do you have it?
Mr. President.
Senator Duncan.
While we're waiting for the copy, I'm going to call the Senate on the amendment.
There is a call to the Senate. Senate will stand at ease. The Senate please come back to order? I believe the call of the Senate is satisfied. Senator Halford. Senator Halford, are you Amendment 46?
Yes.
Senator, I don't see the name on here. Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I move Amendment number 46.
Is there objection to the adoption of Amendment number 46? There is objection. Senator Halford.
Mr. President, Amendment number 46 takes part of the original Ethics Committee version and reinserts it in the guidelines that the Legislative Council shall come up with. Now, it would require that the Council guidelines include a brief description of significant bills, each significant bill introduced by the Legislature's prime sponsor, and the name of each significant campaign contributor. It took out the provision that would have required votes on every significant issue. I believe it's a fairly simple standard. It would be adopted by the Council. It's far less than the version that came out of the Ethics Committee, but it's a little bit more than the version that came out of the Finance Committee.
Is there a continued objection to the adoption of the amendment?
Yeah, I object.
Senator Frank?
Mr. President, you know, I think that all of us could come up with a real impressive list of significant legislation. You know, I'd probably read a lot like our campaign materials. You know, it'd be, we were for this, and we were for motherhood, and we were for apple pie, and we were for working on hard on this, and we're working hard on that. You know, and it wouldn't really tell our constituency much at all about whether the bill got through four committees and or whether it died in the first committee or four, or whether the legislator worked on it 1 minute or worked on it, you know, extremely diligently through the whole legislative process. Certainly, you'd know whether, you could know, although this doesn't require it, you could go and find out if bill actually became law by going down to Legislative Information Office, but you wouldn't necessarily have it on here. But, Mr. President, it seems like when we start telling each other what's significant and what we ought to put in here, that we're just opening ourselves up for a whole mess of political, I don't know what you call it, but anyway, I think it'd be inadvisable.
Senator Pierce.
I understand that the Ledge Council or someone will decide what a significant contributor is in terms of, I assume, the dollar amount. But I'm curious as to how this works. If we're allowed two newsletters a year, we serve a four-year term. Does that mean that in each newsletter, after we're elected, we list each time who the contributors were for that campaign? Because that's the way I think this reads.
Senator.
No, the intent was
originally written was only those contributors that are new from your last newsletter, only the newest ones. You wouldn't repeat them each newsletter. It would just be the folks that contributed at a certain amount, whichever Ledge Council says, in that time frame between newsletters. So there was never any intent to have the whole list there.
Senator Pierce.
Perhaps it would be more sense to not allow those who are actually in a campaign to do these newsletters. If that's the problem, if we're trying to, because we're limiting the amount of time where you can take campaign contributions from June 1st to December 31st to the year previous. You can't take them during the session. Then from after session, I guess, until the election after. And I'm not sure that it works quite the way it was intended.
Senator Duncan.
Well, of course, if you're in the first or second year of a four-year Senate term and you list contributors in your newsletter during those 2 years and we have to pass this bill, you got major problems because you're not supposed to be raising money during that period of time. So I think it just kind of, I think it works itself out, the fact that there's only going to be 1 year where you'll be listing contributors.
Further discussion. Senator Lyons.
Mr. President, this whole scenario reminds me of a TV program I seen the other night where it said, example, Congress is working on election reform. They're trying to find a way to keep themselves in office for life.
Further discussion? Question being, shall Amendment number 46 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote, and so Amendment number 46 fails by a vote of 6 yeas and 14 nays. Are there any other amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Senator Rohde?
Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 415 be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, placed for final passage.
Without objection, Senate Bill 415 is in third reading.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 415, Finance amended, an act establishing a legislative ethics commission and standards of conduct for legislators candidates for the legislature and legislative employees, former legislators and employees and lobbyists requiring financial disclosure by legislators, candidates for the legislature and certain legislative employees, amending legislators' compensation and allowances and providing for an effective date.
Senator Porchot, there is a letter of intent. Would you move that I be shown as a co-sponsor, please?
I would move and ask unanimous consent that Senator Kelly be shown as a co-sponsor to the Senate letter of intent to 415.
Without objection. Senator Porchot?
Mr. President? Mr. President, is this the proper time to move the letter of intent?
We are in. Yes.
I would move the letter of intent. Before I ask unanimous consent, I paid close attention to the workings of the Senate Finance Committee over the last day or day and a half, and it was clear that there were problems in adopting on faith by the committee the commentary and guidelines that had been prepared. And also, at the same time, I recognized that there was legitimate concerns about including what we normally consider intents, findings, and letter of intent material within the body of statute. As an alternative to that, Mr. President, I am proposing here in a letter of intent, not to be included in the statute, the statement of principles with some small editing by myself that tracked very closely the principles included in the joint committee on ethics CS, and picks up these for general guidance, providing a general framework of our ethics code that I hope we will be adopting here, and puts it into a letter of intent. With that, I would ask unanimous consent.
Without objection, the letter of intent is adopted. The further discussion on Senate Bill 415. Question being, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 415, finance amended, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote. And so committee substitute for Senate Bill 415 has passed, finance amended, has passed the Senate by a vote of 14 yeas and 6 nays. 6 nays. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, give notice of my intent to reconsider Senate Bill 415. Oh, I'm sorry. I move to ask unanimous consent to vote on the bill to vote on the effective date clause.
Effective dates clause, plural. Without objection, effective dates are adopted. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I give notice of my intent to reconsider Senate Bill 415.
Senate Bill 14, reconsideration is noted. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I move to ask unanimous consent that my reconsideration of Senate Bill 14 is moved at this time.
Without objection, committee substitute for Senate Bill 415, finance as amended, is in front of the body in third reading. Is there any discussion? Senator Fisher.
I'm going to vote no again, and let me just say why I'm going to do so, because I think there was a total lack of public testimony. We say we went hour and hour, and we did, but the general public was not involved. This was done by the people here who are supposed to be watching themselves. There was no testimony given by teleconference in my area. There were a little bit that I did hear, and in the Finance Committee, one member was there. Because there was no really notice what was going on down here. It was a railroad. You know, we had to get this thing through in 3 days at all costs. And that's one of the big ones. The public testimony did say there's constitutional problems with the bill. And the attorneys will say there most likely is. Or there most probably may be. You know, this kind of stuff. But there's a problem there. The one thing that we did not do, and because of haste, we left it out. And I think we should have looked at the legislative findings and ethical principles. Some changes needed to be made, but we should have looked at them. But because we got a 59-page document, all of a sudden, oh, my God, we're going to totally disregard that. We just don't have the time. We're talking ethics. Time should be made available for ethics, for good ethics. The bill itself, what does it really say? I don't know. Maybe somebody in here does know what it says, but I would venture to say most of us do not. We had three different attorneys at varying times agreeing, disagreeing, and it just went around and around and around. And so they didn't know either. We would hear phrases like, God, that's ridiculous, or that's absurd. And once in a while, we'd laugh. But you know what? It was laughable. Some of the things we did were just downright stupid and laughable. We had a situation come up like close relationships. Okay, here's the way it was talked in the committee if you missed it. Well, what about affairs? Well, you probably can have an affair for one night, but you don't make it a serial. You know, one night, you're okay. If the next night you don't, but you can go back again. I mean, this is kind of ridiculous to even go in and discuss these things. But these are things that might be opened up somewhere down the road. the thing that really is really stupid about the thing, we've got the gifts. Okay, so we were talking about little boxes of candy with a little tag on it that says, please vote for our little pet project. Maybe it's handicapped people or something. The first time we discussed it, it was illegal. The next morning, the same attorneys, well, it's legal now. That night, it was illegal. Now, my gosh, somewhere along the way, we're going to have to make those decisions, but the attorneys can't even decide and put it in front of a commission. They won't know either. But I can't support mainly this bill because I think it's a pay raise that, if we do deserve it, should have been done in a separate piece of legislation, not here. And I think it's a roundabout way, backdoor approach to get a pay raise under the guise of ethics, and I think it's wrong. I don't think it was ethical. The other thing that really disturbed me is when this bill first came from Josephson, and let's face it, he's the author of the main substance of the bill, I think at that moment, the ethics clock should have started. That's when it should have at least started, but it didn't. And the things that we're saying we shouldn't be doing, we were doing. I think when you was good tomorrow ethically, it should be good today ethically. And I don't think you can just say, well, tomorrow's a different day, but you can do it today. And for those reasons, Mr. Chairman, I will be voting no.
Before show.
Mr. President, I know the hour's late. We're tired. There's several things said by the member from Kenai that I can't let go unsaid. And on the matter of hearings, I don't know what particular forum he was talking about. There were some witnesses up in the Senate Finance Committee, but we held 3 days of hearings by the Joint Ethics Committee. We did teleconference the hearings. On the matter of gifts, there was a discussion in which the member participated, and there was indeed confusion. There was no confusion in my mind. In fact, the irony was there was a lot of debate centered around bribery. I mean, it had nothing to do with this legislative ethics code. It dealt with our bribery statute that's been on the books for years, years prior to the first ethics law. Second issue, the third issue on pay raise, somehow the pay raise is linked to a recommendation by the consultant. This is the same. I will say, I mean, obviously it's in the bill. It is linked. There's no denying that. But the figure for the pay raise is the same pay raise figure recommended over 2 years ago by our Salaries Commission. Independent people looking at legislative pay have recommended $40,000 for at least 2 years. As far as the ethics clock starting, as far as permissible or impermissible actions, Mr. President, we have an old Latin expression called ex post facto in this country. You can't pass a law, go back in time, declare somebody's actions prior to the passage of the law illegal. I mean, always has been that way, always will. It's a good way to do business.
Senator Rohde. Without objection. Further discussion?
Question.
Senator Jaroff.
Thank you, President. I, too, am going to continue to vote against the bill. And I guess I've been concerned with the process right from the beginning. And I haven't had the opportunity to listen to Mr. Josephson speak, nor was I swayed by his oratory talents. But we've talked about the $70,000 contract, and people think there that's all it is. It's $70,000 plus expenses. Plus expenses. I don't know what the addition is going to be on this. I've asked Legislative Affairs there to kind of give me a rundown of what's been expended so far, and they don't have everything in yet. And I've heard figures there that range, I don't know where, Mr. President. But I would hope there that we would have a true picture of that before we get out of here. You know, I'm trying to figure out who in my district there has said that ethics has been a real priority of this session. I went through and looked through the POMs that I have received since we started the ethics work in this legislature. And not one of those POMs was from my district. We had a number from Anchorage and a number from Fairbanks. And I suppose, Mr. President, if I take my shoes off, I could count all the POMs I have with all 20 digits. There just haven't been that many that have come in. What we're doing here is we're yielding, I think, to the pressures of the news media in this state. I don't think anybody here denies that. I don't have anybody there. I don't have the newspapers in my district. Maybe I don't feel the same pressure that a number of you feel there. Thank you. I'm against it. I had an amendment here that I was going to introduce. I'm not going to introduce it. But if you want ethics, go back to the Ten Commandments. There is ethics. If you followed every one of those Ten Commandments, not one of your constituents would oppose you today. All right? I have copies right here. If some of you need to be brushed up a little bit, and I'll leave them in your boxes out here so that you can read them tonight. But I'm not saying everybody in here violates these, but I think just as basic guidelines, and people live their daily lives, that these are guidelines to follow. If we follow them in this business, we don't have any problems. And a lot of people in here, every one of you probably don't have any problems. I think we're all good, ethical people. We really try to do a job for our constituents. I think our constituents appreciate that. And they appreciate that by sending us down every 2 years or every 4 years, whether a House member or a Senate member. If we're not doing a good job, we won't be back. And I think that's where your real judgment of ethics comes about. And so, Mr. President, I'm going to continue to oppose this. I'm not opposing an ethical standard. I'm not opposing ethics laws for legislators. I think we have good ethic laws right now, listening to some of the debate that we've had. And I appreciate the chairman of the Finance Committee, the work that he has done, the pressure that was put upon him to get this bill out, the resistance that he came forward with and saying, no, we're going to hear this bill through. I appreciate that very much. I think everybody in here appreciates that as well. We finally had a good committee hearing on this process. And so, Mr. President, I'm going to continue to oppose this, not because I don't like ethics, but because I'm concerned about the process and the way we came about and the short time that we had to deal with this issue. And I appreciate the delayed effective dates on this. I think it gives us time to come back, review, and to make necessary changes if need be.
For the information of the body, in a memo from Legislative Affairs last week, the expenses for the Josephson contract were right about $14,000. We don't anticipate them rising much higher. Senator Yearling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to thank, again, all the people who worked so hard in the last 3 or 4 days when this bill came to us so quickly, and there was a lot of pressure on it. I think there was very substantive things that were involved in here, and certainly rules and regulations that we're going to have to follow from years forward. I'm going to support the bill, and I think that the Finance Committee has worked very hard through the day and the night to come up with a bill that everybody can support as the member from Kodiak mentioned. And I think with the effective dates on the bill and the fact that this can be looked at again next year and at the same time putting the law in place is a good move. And I think that we did have the public hearings on the bill instead of just railroading the bill through under the guise of ethics, but by slowing the bill down and going through it page by page and looking at it, I think we gave the opportunity for the rest of the membership to know exactly what they were voting for and ensuring its passage today. And I think that was the key. I think it was communication and not just ramming the thing down people's throats. I think when people had an opportunity to look at it and look at it carefully, that's why you see it on the floor today and its passage right now. Thank you.
Senator Lyson.
Mr. President, I pretty well expressed my concerns last week, but I would like to compliment the Finance Committee that they did address the issues. I think that they slowed this effort down. We knew it was on a fast track, and I think that's the problem with how we handle this issue. I think we pretty well recognize that we need some substantial changes in ethics. The chairman of the Ethics Commission for this body was going forward on those changes. We identified them in the meetings because we'd gotten ourselves in a box, and we were trying to find a reasonable way out without getting involved in being stampeded into doing something because it's election year, because the newspapers want you to do it. And believe me, it was a crusade by the newspapers. All you have to do is read the editorials the last 3 or 4 days. You can't deny that. It's there in black and white. And even going to the point, Mr. President, of writing letters to my editor, Sitka, by Mr. Josephson, wondering why his reception was not all that warm over here. And he says something about a huckster selling goods, and he said, I never tried to sell anything. Hey, now that's baloney. He's trying to sell his program. We know it. He's written two articles for the Daily News. That's salesmanship. That's not saying, oh, I'm not trying to sell a thing. But the whole point being is that I am, you know, rather comfortable in the fact that we at least didn't pass the original bill, which he said, don't change, because if you do, you're going to lose the whole meeting. I think at least we had enough guts to recognize that's not the thing to do. But unfortunately, Mr. President, we didn't have enough guts to slow this down and really know what we're doing and what the effect's going to be.
Senator Coghill.
I realize the hour's late, and just briefly, I think that one of the things that we have to remember is that in passing this particular piece of legislation, which is going to be known as the Ethics Law of 1990, that we do have an ethics law on the books right now. You have an ethics standard. You have a standard of conduct. You have all of the key elements that are necessary right now to guide this legislature under the constitutional provisions, where that you have three members from the House, three members from the Senate, three members from the general public. And I've had the privilege of serving with the two distinguished senators for the last 2 years on that committee, and I think that that committee has done their work, and there's done their work well. We've received quite a bit of criticism because we ran into some stumbling blocks, and we ran into some what you might call brick walls. And the legislative findings within this Legislative Ethics Act that we are governed under right now is substantially shorter than what all of the rhetoric that we've heard today, but it hits right to it. It says, it is the purpose of this act to establish standards of conduct for the state legislators and legislative employees and establish a select committee of legislative ethics to consider alleged violations of this chapter and to render advisory opinions to persons affected by this chapter. Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that we, in our deliberation of the ethics program, are finding ourselves in a position where the substantial cost of the government is going to go tremendously higher than what it was under our three citizens, three senators, and three House members. And I think that it gets down to how you live. And I think the litmus test of every legislator is, how do you live? How do you conduct yourself? How do you conduct yourself in your personal relationship between your family, your colleagues, and the people that you represent? So I think that you can't really get down to legislating integrity or morality. You can't legislate ethics. That's built within us. That's something that mom and dad trained you at the breakfast table. I'm going to oppose this because in the 20-some-odd amendments that I introduced, I tried to neutralize some of those areas that I felt that were smacking into the Constitution and into the areas of the rights of the individuals as we serve this society. And I think that the crowning blow of the thing is when you stuck that great big carrot out there and you put the legislative pay inside of the legislative ethics. I think is the thing that the public is going to note as the power behind the action.
Further discussion. Senator Frank?
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a few words. I think we do have a good bill here. I think it went through an adequate process. Certainly, I've spent more time on this piece of legislation in committee than any other piece of legislation this year. I'm comfortable with the bill. It retains a citizen legislature. It doesn't limit one's ability to engage in other activities in terms of employment. But I do not like the idea of tying the legislative pay raise to it. And for that reason, I'm going to be voting no.
Further discussion. Senator Rohde.
I would ask the unanimous consent the letter of intent be adopted.
Without objection, letter of intent is adopted.
Question?
The question being, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 415, finance amended, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote.
Have all members voted? Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote, and so committee substitute for Senate Bill 415, Finance Amended, passes the Senate by a vote of 14 yeas and 6 nays. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, who has the 10th vote to the vote effective date clauses?
Check. Senator Halford.
Mr. President, the bill contains three effective dates, one being November of this year for the election law provisions, then, as we heard, January for the commission provisions, and July for the conflict of interest requirements. But if, under the Constitution, this legislation doesn't get an effective date by 2/3 vote, in fact, it will take effect 90 days after it's signed by the governor. And if we want to see some action in this area, we can vote against the effective date on this legislation, and it will probably take effect about the 1st of September, depending on when it's signed by the governor. I believe that that will make a difference in this election cycle. That will make a difference in this year's conflict of interest provisions. That will get the commission going this summer, and that will truly do some good. It's an interesting program when we always want to pass our ethics on to someone else. The way the bill is before us, it would not take effect at all for the 16th Alaska legislature in any way. The only thing that would happen would be after election campaign fundraising after November. But we can make this bill effective 90 days from signing by voting against the effective dates.
Senator Porchot?
That's certainly true. There's a couple of things that really bother me about that. First is it will make a difference in this upcoming election cycle, certainly in September. It'll be chaos. I mean, there's some things that APOC is going to take several months to straighten out now. We have a fiscal note on the bill exactly to help them do new manuals, new training sessions to get people. There's some significant changes in our campaign finance laws in here, and we're going to be adopting, hopefully, down the calendar, another bill to conform those to the whole APOC process. I don't see that as constructive at all. The original joint committee bill had always proposed a November 6th, day after election, implementation date, and I think that it was made a lot of sense. This bill keeps that same date. The second major thing that would happen, of course, is that we would get a pay raise, I guess, by my standards, maybe the same pay by other people's interim per diem standards, but I think that's very inappropriate to have pay raises take effect in the middle of people's terms. The proper time for pay raises after the election cycle, the beginning of next legislature.
Question being, Senator Halford.
The other way to deal with it, of course, is to divide the question between 26, Section 26, Section 27, and Section 28. And I would move and ask unanimous consent that the question be divided between the three effective dates.
There is objection. Question is, should the question be divided? Members may proceed to vote. If all members voted, Secretary will lock the roll. Any senator wish to change their vote, Secretary will record the vote, and so the question will not be divided by a vote of 6 yeas and 14 nays. The question being, shall the effective dates take effect? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote so the effective dates do take effect on committee substitute for Senate Bill 415, Finance Amended. We have about 25 items left on today's calendar. We must finish those today. I anticipate that will take about 3 hours. We should probably take a break and come back at 4:30. Senator Ewing?
Thank you, Mr. President. Before we take a break, what I'd like to do is move down to unfinished business because the conferees are going to have to go upstairs. So, number one, we'd like to be excused. And second of all, I need to waive some notices here in case that we don't get back to the session under unfinished business unless you're still going to be going.
Go ahead and waive the notices, Senator.
I'll go ahead and do that. I would move an Ash Adams consent to waive the 24-hour publication notices on the following bills: House Bill 491, an act creating a sentencing commission; House Bill 563, an act relating to the amount of a permanent fund dividend; and House Bill 476, an act relating to the members of the Board of Fish and Game. And committee substitute for House Bill 469 on school performance. And House Concurrent Resolution 46. Same subject.
No objection. Those bills are waived. Senator Fahrenkamp.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, do we have time during this break for Resources Committee meetings or Judiciary Committee meetings? What's the situation? How long are we going to be
breaking? What's the feeling of the body? You want to come back in at 5 or 5:30 instead of 4:30? What do you think? 4:30. 4:30. Do you think you can have a resources meeting in 45 minutes?
Oh, easy.
Okay. Senator Fahrenkamp, are you announcing a resources meeting?
A Resources Committee meeting will be meet in 10 minutes.
Okay, are there further announcements? Senator Ewing?
Free conferees be excused from voting.
Senator Halford?
Are we excusing members that are in the building, or are we listing them as being in the conference? If there are votes, they're on official business. They're absent on official business. There's a significant
That's what they're asking for.
They are not asking to be excused from the call.
Yes. Senator Ewing, Senator Binkley, Senator Duncan will be shown as missing,
absent
on official business if they miss a roll call. Now, is there further unfinished business? What's the motion, Senator? Well, you will be shown as excused on official business. Any Senator Lyson?
We have a brief at ease.
Senator will stand at ease. Senator will please come back to order. Senator Lyson.
Mr. President, I'm not quite sure where I am here, but I would move and ask unanimous consent that the 24-hour, the publication, a notice on Senate Bill 449 authorizing the Healy Project, House Bill 10, Act relating to forgiveness of student loans, House Bill 123, an act relating to Alaska Industrial Authority, Export Authority, House Bill 222, an act relating to optometrists, House Bill 355, premium tax, House Bill 499, be waived, the notice be waived.
Without objection.
Public hearing be waived.
Senator Sturzulewski.
Mr. President announced the Rules Committee meeting at 4:20. The bills are posted. That would be in the bills room.
Senator Fisher.
2 minutes before we come back, Senate Hess will meet. We just have one bill. It's House Bill 469. We're the only committee referral, so we do have to.
Senator Szymanski?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Motion for recess. Meeting, Community Regional Affairs, the meeting, Senate Bill 500, and other bills before committee.
Senator Fisher.
That was in error. It's House Bill 146, applicants for medical licenses and permits.
Senator Fahrenkamp.
Thank you. Under unfinished business.
Senator.
I would move and ask unanimous consent that the 12-hour notice be waived on House Bill 443.
Without objection. Further announcements? Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, move to ask the Senate to stand at recess until 4:30.
Senate stands at recess.
Order, Senator Rohde, would you place a call of the Senate, please? With the exception of the conference committee members until we need them.
Yes, sir.
That's the better deal. Great. I call the Senate.
Senate, please come back to order. We are continuing with the calendar. Senator Rohde?
I would move we revert to committee reports.
Without objection, Madam Secretary.
Resources Committee considered Senate Joint Resolution Number 85. Incidental tank of Stellar Sea Lions by Commercial Fisheries. Majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with a committee substitute and do pass. Report was signed by Senator Fahrenkamp, Chair. Concurring Senator Sturzulewski, Lyson, Jar, zero fiscal note. SJR 85 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
Community Regional Affairs Committee considered Senate Bill Number 500, Alaska Coastal Policy Council, recommends it be replaced with a committee substitute and reports to back as follows. Senator Szymanski, Chair, signed to pass. Senators Pierce, Petro, and Frank signed no recommendation. Zero fiscal note. Senate Bill Number 500 has a further referral to the Finance Committee.
Rules Committee. Oops, go ahead. Finance.
The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill Number 146, Finance Amended, limiting civil liability for damages relating to peer review committees, licensing board, and impaired physician programs. and reports it back as follows. Senator Fisher, Chair, and Senator Kelly sign no recommendation. Senator Adams signed due pass. Previous Zero House fiscal note, CS for HB 146 Finance, has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
Resources Committee considered. Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 456 Finance, Fisheries Business Tax, and reports it back as follows. Senator Fahrenkamp, Chair, and Senators Frank and Sturzlewski signed no recommendation. Senators Elias and Jarve signed due pass, fiscal note attached. Committee substitute for House Bill number 456 Finance has a further referral to the Finance Committee. And those are all the standing committee reports this evening, Mr. President.
That brings us back to the daily calendar. Is that everybody?
Mr. President, I would move that Senate Bill 384 replace the bottom of the Senate Bill calendar and that we take up Senate Bill 551.
Without objection. Senator Kennedy. One, Madam Secretary.
Senate Bill number 551 by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to the investments of financial institutions. Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill and recommends it be replaced the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute. Majority due pass. Report was signed by Senator Elias and Chair. Concurring, Senators Coghill, Curtula, and Rohde, Senator Fake sign a recommendation. Zero fiscal note. Rules Committee considered the bill and recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Sturzlewski, Chair. Concurring, Senators Elias and Kelly. There's a Labor and Commerce Committee substitute.
Senator Elias,
I've been asking Adams consent that the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute is adopted.
CS for Senate Bill number 551, Labor and Commerce, by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to investments of financial institutions and providing for an effective date.
Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I move that Adams consent that SB 551 considered engrossed advance third reading as final passage.
Without objection, Senate Bill 551 is in third reading.
CS for Senate Bill number 551, LNC, an act relating to investments of financial institutions and providing
for an effective date. Is there any discussion? Question being, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill? Senator Halford.
We have an explanation of what the bill does.
Senator Jones.
Mr. President, I was notified here last week by one of the state charter banks, happens to be First Bank of Ketchikan, that the state charter banks now have the opportunity to receive some mortgage dollars from the Federal Home Loan Bank. These are low income, moderate income housing dollars that are sorely needed, in at least in southeastern Alaska and assume elsewhere. Three banks are affected. First Bank at Ketchikan, the Denali Bank and Fairbanks, and Key Bank. When the savings and loan bailout legislation was passed in Congress, it made these dollars available through the Federal Home Loan Bank to these state charter banks. They have to be allowed to invest in that bank to acquire those funds. In our statutes, we don't allow that at this time. It just takes adding the ability for those banks, as you'll see in the bill. It adds the Federal Home Loan Bank to other federal banks at this time. And I think it's a good bill. It brings mortgage sorely needed mortgage dollars into the state. It allows low-income people, middle-income people to meet the requirements to move into housing. Thank you.
Questions? Question being, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 551, Labor and Commerce, passed to Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary locked the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary record the vote. And so committee substitute for Senate Bill 551, Labor and Commerce, passes the Senate by a vote of 17 yeas and no nays. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I move to ask the consent to vote on the bill to the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted.
Mr. President, I give notice of my intent to reconsider Senate Bill 551.
Reconsideration is noted.
Mr. President, I move to ask the consent with my reconsideration of Senate Bill 551 be taken up at this time.
Without objection. The question being, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 551, Labor and Commerce, pass to Senate? Members may proceed to vote. If all members voted, Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote. And so Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 551, Labor and Commerce, passes the Senate By a vote of 17 yeas and no nays. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, move the action items consent to vote on the bill being served the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted.
Senate Bill Number 384 by Senators Pershaw and Kelly, an act relating to election campaigns. State Affairs Committee considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with the State Affairs CS and do pass. The report was signed by Senator Pershaw, Chair, concurring Senators Kelly, Adams, Ewing, and Fake. Zero fiscal note. Judiciary Committee considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute and reports the back as follows. Senator Fake's Chair and Senator Zemanski signed do pass. Senator Pierce signed do not pass unless amended. Fiscal note. Zero fiscal note. It was referred to rules, and from rules it was referred back to State Affairs. State Affairs Committee considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a second CS and do pass. Report was signed by Senator Pershaw, Chair, concurring Senator Fakes and Kelly. Senator Adams signed no recommendation. Rules Committee considered the bill and recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Sturgiolowski, Chair, concurring Senators Rohde, Kelly, and Eliason. There's a State Affairs CS.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the second State Affairs Committee be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the second State Affairs Committee substitute is adopted.
Senator Camp. Brief at ease.
Okay, we've got two amendments.
Without objection, the second Senate State Affairs Committee substitute has been adopted. Madam Secretary.
CS for Senate Bill Number 384, Second State Affairs, an act relating to election campaigns and providing for an effective date. Amendment Number 1 by Senators Pierce and Pershaw, page 3 after line 6, insert. Public funds prohibited, and this has been distributed.
Has that? I don't have the amendment. Is there a package of amendments?
No, only two on this bill.
Okay, Senator Pierce. Senator Szymanski? Senator will stand at ease.
Have your packets from yesterday, and I apologize for that, but it was just very late last night, and so what we did is to leave the packets from yesterday on your desks and then a new packet for today, so that means some shuffling. So please take a look at what you have.
Now, does everybody have a copy of Amendment Number 1?
Excuse me, Senator Pierce.
Okay, Senator Pierce.
Thank you. Before I ask unanimous consent, I'd like to just give a brief explanation. In the State Affairs, the original State Affairs substitute that moved out of committee, this language was in that State Affairs substitute. In fact, it went further. Not only said that the state agencies of the state, public corporations, and the U of A may not use public funds to support or oppose the election of a candidate, it at that time went on to say they could not use public funds on behalf of or in opposition to a ballot proposition or question. That was changed in the Judiciary Committee. That ballot proposition or question language dropped out, but the language that's in the amendment you have before you stayed in the Judiciary Committee substitute. Came to rules and went back to State Affairs the second time. It's my understanding that the State Affairs Committee, in their attempt to make the bill just fit the Ethics Committee bill, this fell out. If you'll remember, there was a case in the state this past year that went to APOC. While there was a fine, it wasn't clear in statute that it was illegal for a municipality to expend public funds in the election to help the election of a candidate. This would make that clear in statute, and with that, I'll ask unanimous consent.
Objection. Here's objection. Do we have to copy every amendment or something this simple? Okay, Senate will come back to order. Senator Halford, amendment to the amendment. Madam Secretary.
Amendment to Amendment Number 1 offered by Senator Halford after first sentence, after candidate, insert or ballot proposition.
Amendment to Amendment Number 1.
Without objection, Amendment to Amendment Number 1 is adopted. Senator Pierce.
I have a question to make earlier. Did you mean for that also to cover municipalities, sir? You need to put it in two places if you
did. Yeah, I didn't have a problem with any municipality in mind. I had a problem with a particular issue at the state level, but I don't have any problem with adding it there in both places.
Through discussion?
I object.
Senator Porchot.
I mean, we need to be clear on what the amendment is on the clerk's desk.
I only show after the first candidate in the amendment, sir.
Senator Porchot.
This was a major discussion, I think, in both judiciary and state affairs. And there are some problems. I mean, there's nothing wrong on the face of it. It's when you get into the details, and some of the examples that were used were, does the state include the governor traveling as the governor out to some area, giving a speech, advocating a particular ballot initiative? And the attorney said that, you know, kind of a gray area, that he has certain rights to advocate his program. Some of those programs may be ballot initiatives. The other example that's been brought to my attention later is the case of GO bonds. You know, where we may be voting on GO bonds in the future, and they go to the ballot, and gee, maybe we and the governor are out advocating for those ballot initiatives or ballot measures. So I'm a little leery on this whole subject, and unfortunately, I think it was colored this year by particular events dealing with this administration and the endowment and some of the activities that were going on. I think that we really need to think through this and to see what this means. Obviously, public funds have to be spent for appropriate public purposes. That goes through with all appropriations, and of course, the AG's office was very insistent that they do not spend funds that aren't duly appropriated and authorized.
Senator Pierce.
Actually, in my mind, the amendment for the state is perhaps not as important, perhaps not even as important as the amendment to the municipality portion. Those of you from my municipality will remember on the school bond issue last fall, there was a major question over whether or not the school district was using state funds or local funds to advertise and advocate for the passage of that school bond issue above and beyond just the explanation of what it was, that they were actually advocating and using funds to do that. APOC was probably not flooded with complaints about that, but they certainly got a number of complaints. They had to attempt to deal with it. The law isn't clear. They were making rulings in the dark. If the senator, and at this point I'm not even sure what the amendment to the amendment is, whether it covers both or not, but I would like to have it cover the municipalities and make that clear.
Senator Halford?
Yeah, I do have a redraft. I'll bring it up.
Senator Stanides. Senator Duncan, is the conference no longer at the table?
Mr. President, that's correct. May I, I'm not sure where we're at in this process, but may we return to introduction of guests?
Without objection, Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to introduce a guest in the far gallery, Senator Ziegler's gallery, the wife of Senator Jaroff, Yvonne.
Senator Jaroff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce a constituent of Senator Duncan, his wife, Charlotte.
We are on amendment to amendment number 1 on committee substitute for Senate Bill 384 in second reading. Senator Halford, amendment to amendment number one.
The amendment to the amendment has been moved.
I object to the call of the House.
There is a call in the Senate. Would the Senate please stand at ease? We have in front of us amendment to amendment number one by Senator Halford. Amendment number one was moved by Senator Pierce. Is there further discussion on the amendment to amendment number one? Senator Curtula.
Mr. President, there is some substantive value to the amendment, but our ballot proposition worries me for certain programs that I think may well, there may be an argument, and we have some people that would argue the point, whether it was a legitimate one or not, as to what public funds we're doing in the support or opposition of a ballot proposition. I think it is in the interest of the institutions to at times come out in a very positive way and explain their position or explain the ballot propositions. And I'm afraid that this would muddy up the water. That's the reason I oppose it.
Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would call the members' attention to the use of the words to support or oppose the election of a candidate or a ballot proposition. So it does not limit the ability to put out information, but it does limit it if that information is so much on one side or the other of the issue that it is essentially supporting or opposing a given position. I understand the concern of the prior speaker. I believe that most of the institutions like the University of Alaska or municipalities, if they're looking for a sewer bond or some kind of a bond issue, could go out and generate funds from private sources to be advocating for a given ballot proposition. But I feel that the advocating of ballot proposition with public money generally is wrong.
Further discussion? Question being, shall amendment to amendment number one pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote. And so amendment to amendment number one passes by a vote of 14 yeas and 6 nays. That brings us down to amendment number one. Is there discussion on amendment number one? Senator Porcheau. Without further discussion, the question being, shall amendment number one